Hi there. Thanks for listening to All Latino. This week, we're taking a listen to the amazing music created by a mashup of Latino and Jewish cultures here in the United States. Our friends at Latino USA are also exploring that cultural intersection this week, so please give them a listen as well. You can find the Latino USA podcast at npr.org/podcast or the NPR One app. From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Jasmine Garst. And yes, that is Celia Cruz singing Hava Nagila in Hebrew.
And that is the theme of today's show, the intermingling of the Jewish culture and Latino culture here in the United States and the wonderful music it presented. And with us to tell us about that is Josh Kuhn. Josh, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Josh is a professor at the Annenberg School for Communication at USC.
Did everyone notice how Jasmine said Hava Nagila?
Yes. Hava, sorry.
That was very good.
Josh, how did you first become interested in this topic of the Jewish influence on Latin music?
I think I probably, in terms of this, the specific collaborations that that we're going to talk about that are all part of this project that I did recently with the Idelson Society for Musical Preservation, I started getting interested in a guy named Mickey Katz back in the 90s, who was a 1950s musical comedian, really skilled clarinet player, but who also did these brilliant parodies of American pop songs in the 1950s. And buried in his catalog were a number of these really just amazingly played mambos that were also very funny Yiddish, English, Spanish parodies. And I heard like a song called like Yiddish a Mambo, and I just didn't know what to make of that collision, and started doing research and investigating about what became this whole large, much larger world, even you could say a kind of cosmology of bagels and bongos hybridity that has a lot of real sociological and intercultural foundations that I started thinking about back in the 90s, and then teamed up with the Idelson Society guys, and we were able to put out this whole collection of stuff recently.
And the name of that collection is?
It's A Scream, How Levine Does the Rumba.
Here's Mickey Katz and Yiddish Mambo from 1958.
On the sidewalks of old New York, my bubby is blowing her car. She digs his little Latin leg. She's on an Afro-Cuban kick. to see her shake it now. You ought to see her shuckle. She shite caramba, gimme mambo, not the huckle buckle. She don't want no flat foot floji, she don't want no fly fly. Beat the bango and the congo, I'm me chaya. Oi! Paris Prada, she loves him avade. Na Yiddish mambo. To see her go to town, she's dancing for her supper. Her lid is popping while she's hopping. She's a mutter hopper. She don't go for Lindy hopping. She don't dig those cats. Get so jealous from Timbales. I'm a higher jet. She's baking your challis for Nora Morales. She mambos in the major league. She's teaching every tenon. Cool and kosher like the rosher. She must cap the pennant. Turkey trotting gives her nothing. Waltzes are too slow. She blows that trouble like in Cuba. She must holler, go! Her kugel is hot for Xavier Cugat. Mambo. Ah, she made the shotgun mambo mad. She's even hip the jammers. And now and then she gets a yen to dig Fernando Lamas. She won't touch the minuet. To her it's strafe like ham. But Poopy Campo knows her tempo. Makes her holler, sham, she don't dig George. My Yiddish mambo, my Yiddish mambo.
So, Josh, I would imagine that the influence of Jewish culture on Spanish language music actually dates back to, you know, before even the Spanish came to Latin America, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, you could do a kind of more, much more global history of, you know, kind of Jewish, Spanish, Jewish, Latin American crossings all the way back to, of course, you know, most obviously within Sephardic culture and, you know, the intermixtures in Spain and North Africa and also lots of intermixtures through Eastern Europe. But the stuff I'm most familiar with and that you know, that we focused on this archive and this compilation kind of deals mostly with the era of recorded sound, and so really focusing on what happens in the United States in the early 1900s when Jewish immigrants and Latino immigrants start sharing some of the same spaces together, ending up on radio together, Spanish and Yiddish intermingling on the streets of New York and the streets of Los Angeles, the streets of Miami, and kind of what music came out of that.
And just for the record, can you give us a brief description of what a Sephardic Jew is?
Sure. By Sephardic, as opposed to, let's say, Ashkenazi Jews, Sephardic Jews are Jews from Spain and Portugal, who were, of course, very adversely affected by the Inquisition, and whose traditions are very different from traditional Ashkenazic music and culture. And to be fair, there's really only one Sephardic performer on this compilation, who is probably one of the most well-known performers on it, the incomparable Edie Gourmet, who is a Sephardic Jew who was born in the Bronx, who got famous before she got famous, really, as the kind of co-pilot with Steve Lawrence of some of the greatest Las Vegas lounge material ever recorded, performed with Trio Los Panchos in Mexico, and she became an icon throughout Latin America.
And that album I saw throughout my childhood at various houses, various parties. There's a track on the compilation. Let's hear that. Which track are we going to hear?
The classic Sabor a Mi.
Tanto tiempo disfrutamos de esta sabor, pero tú llevas también sabor a mí.
Si negaras mi presencia en tu vivir, bastaría con abrazarte y conversar. Tanta vida yo te di que por fuerza tienes ya sabor a mí.
No pretendo ser tu dueña, no soy nada, yo no tengo vanidad. De mi vida doy lo bueno, soy tan pobre que otra cosa puedo dar. Pasarán más de mil años, muchos más, y yo no sé si tenga amor la eternidad. Pero allá tal como aquí, en la boca llevarás sabor a mí.
Picture for us of what was happening in this intermingling between Jewish and Latino immigrants. I mean, was it kind of an affiliation based on exclusion? What was that like? What was that scene like?
Yeah, it's obviously a big, big story, and it's multi-generational. So you could really track it from the kind of 1930s and 40s, as we do, up through the 1980s. And that relationship changes, obviously, because, you know, earlier pre-World War II, you know, in the 1930s and 40s, Jews and Latinos, to some degree, were kind of fellow outsiders, you know, to the U.S. monoculture. And I think that always, when you have two groups who are similarly on the margins, there's a lot of intermingling, a lot of kind of recognition across cultural divides. But after World War II, when Jews start becoming much more part of the kind of white American mainstream, experienced large degrees of upward mobility and move out to the suburbs and whatnot, and Latinos continue to be racialized in the United States, that relationship starts to change shape a little bit. And you can kind of hear that in the music. So you can kind of hear recordings from the 1930s and 40s, which would be, you know, Jews recording Latin music, sometimes mixing Yiddish and Spanish, but also Latinos performing Jewish songs. And then in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, getting into the heyday of salsa, you don't hear, for the most part, Latinos playing Jewish music, but you do hear Jews who have become expert salsa players. And so that dynamic starts to change. And it's one of the interesting things that music can do is actually, you know, kind of let you follow those transformations of ethnic relationships over time.
And to be clear, this is centralized on the East Coast, where the largest population of Jewish immigrants were.
It is. I mean, you know, a lot of this is a New York story, but certainly Miami plays a really big role in this. And, you know, I also have to, of course, represent Los Angeles, where I'm speaking from, where there's a number of really important artists and really important moments and neighborhoods like Boyle Heights, artists like Herb Alpert, Renee Bloch, who were just, you know, central to shaping American popular music, and all came out of that Latin Jewish synergy.
Okay, Josh, you mentioned Miami Beach. This is a perfect time to play the track Miami Beach Mambo, which was written by a well-known Jewish songwriter and made into an international hit by bandleader Xavier Cugat.
Thank you.
can definitely hear the Latin part of it. My untrained ear cannot hear the Jewish elements in this. So Josh and Felix, can you break this down for me? What are the Jewish elements in a song like this?
You mean you don't hear those ancient Hebraic melodies in that song? You really, how do you have a show? It's just, I think you'd be hard pressed to find musical traces that are distinctly or traditionally Jewish. Maybe some, you know, musicologists out there that will want to prove me wrong, and that'll be fantastic. But it's the Miami Beachness here that matters. This is a song that, you know, becomes famous when Xavier Cugat gets his hands on it, and it goes global in a way. It becomes a massive hit in the late 40s. But it was written by Irving Fields, who was a New York Jew, veteran of the Yiddish theater, cruise ship veteran, who was playing a gig at the, depends now, again, this is a Latin Jewish question, either the Versailles Hotel in Miami Beach or the Versailles Hotel in Miami Beach. And he was playing, as the story goes, he was doing a piano rendition of the standard Autumn Leaves. And someone in the audience, a Jewish member of the audience, said, no, we want to hear a rumba. And so he took Autumn Leaves and he kind of messed with it, and he created the Miami Beach Rumba. And this became a major, major hit and really also launched Irving Fields' career. This is a guy who originally, when he recorded for RCA Victor, they changed his name because he recorded for the Latin part of RCA Victor, which was a purple label at the time. So all of his earliest recordings were on the Latin purple vinyl. He was billed not as Irving Fields, but you'll appreciate this, as Campos el Pianista, like the most literal, the most literal alias ever, Fields the piano player.
Before we move on with this week's show, we want to remind you to check out our friends at Latino USA, who are also exploring the Latino-Jewish connection here in the U.S. You can find their podcast at npr.org/podcast and on the NPR One app. Now let's get back to the great music.
Latin entertainers in Hollywood historically have had to try and pass. You know, I'm thinking of Rita Hayworth, you know, who, you know, it was encouraged that you kind of drop your Latinidad. Mm-hmm. Would a Jewish artist, a Jewish musician, be encouraged to not talk about his or her Jewishness like an Edie Gourmet?
I can't speak about Edie Gourmet specifically, though I know she talked about it all the time. But I do think, you know, that's one of the big kind of dramas of Jewish life in America, is the assimilation question. Is, you know, there's the old saying that you know, in the 1920s and 30s in New York, if you wanted to play uptown, you had to lose the Yiddish. If you wanted to play uptown, you kind of had to play British. And so that's always been a trend of kind of losing the accent, not sounding too Jewish in a way, playing any character but a Jew. Which many have argued that's how Hollywood was actually created, an industry created by Jews featuring roles that weren't Jewish. And so that's a big story. But kind of what I love about the Jewish Latin story is that you get the opposite narrative. And that's what I'm really attracted to, is I actually think it's in Latin American music and in Latin styles in the United States where that in a way allowed American Jews to perform their Jewishness, to kind of perform their ethnic outsiderness, using the musical languages of Latinos. So instead of like becoming white, they became more Jewish by becoming Latino, which I think is really, really interesting in some of these songs.
Okay, all of this was happening on the East Coast. Josh, tell us what was going on the West Coast.
You know, on the West Coast, of course, you know, you part of the big difference is also just the way people live. So you didn't always necessarily have the kind of, you know, Spanish Harlem, Jewish Harlem, or Bronx, Brooklyn, mashups of communities living on top of each other in that way. And you also didn't have the kind of street culture that allowed, you know, young Latino kids and young Jewish kids, after they left the Spanish or Yiddish dominant homes of their families, to go out on the street, play stickball together, and, you know, learn how to play salsa and speak Yiddish at the same time together. So you don't have that as much in Los Angeles. and in San Francisco, though it certainly existed. And the kind of big place for that in L.A. was Boyle Heights, which was traditionally a Jewish neighborhood, but also a Japanese neighborhood and a Latino neighborhood, predominantly Mexican neighborhood, that's now predominantly Mexican and Latino. But up until the 1950s, was often talked about as this kind of United Nations ultimate melting pot neighborhood of the United States. That left its mark on artists like Herb Alpert, who again is one of those artists whose early records I think were common in a lot of households throughout Latin America and throughout Latino households in the United States. You know, who was a Jew from Boyle Heights, who was very influenced by Mexican music and Mexican culture. And so you saw those mashups happen a lot on the West Coast as well.
And Herb Alpert had his band, Herb Alpert and the Tijuana, or the Tijuana Brass.
The Tijuana Brass, yes, which as Herb liked to say, were made up only of members who were bagels and salamis. So it was a very authentic band.
And they had the whole shtick. They with the sarapes and the hats and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it was listen to something from him.
One of my favorites, and I do have a handful of favorite of Tijuana Brass songs, The Lonely Bull.
Well, that was the first one.
Yeah, this is a classic. This is Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass and The Lonely Bull.
I'm so fascinated by how the geography of different parts of different cities leads to either the integration or the segregation. You know, how New York, it just by virtue of its subway system and its geography has led to so much cultural mixing versus in SoCal, it's like so spread out and a little bit, you know, it can lead to more segregation. But let me ask you another question, Josh. I think, you know, it would be I would be amiss if I didn't bring out the fact that there is anti-Semitism in Latin America, you know, and I wonder how that came out. I'm thinking of the Hector Lavoe song Aguanile, and it has this one line that I always was like, wait, what? Un judío que a caballo gritaba sin compasión, coge su crucificado, muerto por una traición. A Jew. A horseback Jew screams without compassion and grabs his crucified man who died because of a betrayal. And that's, you know, I feel like that's, I love Hector Lavoe, but that's right there an attitude, right?
Sure.
So how did that ever, was there that here in the U.S.?
Oh, sure. I mean, look, there was plenty of anti-Semitism against Jews, and there was plenty of Jewish racism against Latinos. I think that's part of the story too. And you know what these songs get us to think about are kind of how people collaborate and think along those lines. But I also don't think we can fool ourselves to think that, you know, just because you've got, you know, Celia Cruz singing Havana Aguila, that Jews and Latinos were like holding hands, you know, dancing down the street together always. You know, that this is as real and as complicated as any interracial and any, you know, interethnic friendship or relationship that was fraught with legacies of racism and hierarchies on both sides. So I think it's both anti-Semitism and racism. And you know, they're two sides of the same coin.
So Josh, earlier I was asking you about were there also Latinos who happen to be Jews, you know, like in the U.S., was there a migration of Jewish Latinos, or is that a more recent phenomenon?
No, I think there's always been a tradition of that, you know, especially, let's say, if you take the example, you know, there's Cuban Jews, for example, Mexican Jews who have migrated into the U.S. So there's certainly a long tradition of Latino Jews in the United States.
Was it a two-way street? I mean, were there Latinos who converted to Judaism as well as Jews who converted to Latino?
Jews who converted to Latinoism? Is Latinoism a new religion? Because that's
it's
good.
Our religion.
I would have dropped out of Hebrew school for that one. Maybe I did. Wait a second. Maybe I did do that.
I think you did, bro.
Yeah, I think I did. Dang. Busted.
Let's hear some more music. One of the tracks that I really enjoyed was the track from Machito. And by way of introduction to the song, I was recently at the Library of Congress where Machito's son, Mario Grillo, donated a huge collection of manuscripts to the Library of Congress from Machito and his Afro-Cubans. And he had this really wonderful and funny story about the name the Afro-Cubans. And the historians and music historians always point out that it was one of the first times that the Cuban culture was able to pinpoint in a very public way the Afro part of the Afro-Cuban culture by naming his band Afro-Cubans. But on the side, Machito would always say, yeah, we're Afro-Cubans. He's a Jew. He's an Italian. He's a Jew. He had no Cubans in his band except for Jews, Italians, and Puerto Ricans.
That's so interesting.
It's so funny. Yeah. This is Mambo a la Concord from the Machito Orchestra.
And fascinated by this idea that when I listen to this, I wouldn't be able to tell a Jewish influence. Is it just that like that the Jewish music didn't quite make it into the mix?
No, it did occasionally. I mean, but like with that one, you know, Mambo La Concord, that's a song that actually comes from a record called Vacation at the Concord, a Machito record, that had the marquee sign of the Concord Hotel in the Catskills on the cover of a Machito record. And that was just one of many examples of the extent to which Latin bands, particularly big bands from New York, were the kind of mainstay entertainment of Jewish leisure resorts in the Catskills and the so-called sour cream Sierras of the Borscht Belt.
Wait, no, the sour cream Sierras of the Borscht Belt?
Yeah.
What is the Borscht Belt?
The Borscht Belt refers to the chain of hotels in the Catskills Mountains that were primary kind of vacation spots for Jews who would leave the cities. Of course, Didn't you see Dirty Dancing?
They dance first.
No, they dance mambo. Of course, they were. They dance mambo. That's Dirty Dancing is the kind of greatest Hollywood tribute to the Jewish Latin experience, where you got mambo dancers on stage. Nobody put Baby in the corner. It's because she wanted to dance mambo.
Nobody put Babela in a corner.
No. What is happening on this show?
What?
This conversion's going around all over the place.
No, I'm not converging. I mean, I'm already there. Josh, we could talk to you for hours. I mean, I will never get bored of this topic.
I hope that's true of your listeners. They might have already left us.
No, I don't think.
Josh Kuhn, thank you so much for bringing in the music and bringing in this story.
Of course. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And I hope we get to do a part two, because there's a lot more music to listen to. So will you stop by again?
I'm just saying, you guys, we've got 8 nights of Hanukkah coming up, so I'm here.
8 nights of Alt Latino.
We're here for you. Whatever you need.
So let's end the show with the title of the compilation, which has the best title, I think, of all time. It's A Scream, How Levine Does the Rumba.
Well, and can I just say what I love about this this song, coming from like a Jewish family myself, like that Levine gets like a backache and he starts complaining about it in the song.
He does. But he
which
also,
which I think is
Jasmine,
like culturally.
He also learns what his maracas are for.
We want to remind you that you can hear this song. We're going to leave that there, man. We're going to leave that
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I mean, like, depends on whatever floats your boat, man.
That's right. You can hear this song and all the rest of the music from this great compilation on our website at npr.org/altlatino.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We are NPR's Alt Latino.
Josh, again, thank you so much for coming by.
Of course, thank you, guys.
This is fun.
Sam Levine came from Odessa, where he was a fine fence presser. He really knew to make a cream. Since he improved his education in the field of dancipation, his life took on a brand new lease. It's a scream how Levine does the rumba. You should see how his fat belly shakes. He glides and he yells, ay, 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 caramba. Then at night he complains his back aches. Since he vacationed south of the border, everyone has to call him senor. He thinks he's a real caballero. Since he learned what his maracas is for, he really shakes it. The band goes dum-de-yum-dum. Levine goes tie-tree-ay-tie. And then he spins like a top and he forgets when to stop. What a dream taught Levine how to rumba. Was the daughter of Pancho O'Neill. She gave him 6 lessons and her telephone number. And that's how Levine got the feel of the rumba. The band goes dum-dri-um-dum. Levine goes tie-tri-ay-tie. And then he makes with a break and hollers solid J. Oh, Levine is the life of his party. Oh, she always seems to be so inspired. He throws his heart and soul into his rumba. Then when he goes home, he says he's too tired to do his duty. His wife complains that her ballroom chic has lost his homework technique. She says her Don Juan don't wanna. He keeps promising mañana. It's a scream how Levine does the rumba. He's such hot stuff, he sure lets off steam. But his wife says at night she needs radar to get that Levine on the beam. Cause Levine gives his all to the rumba and leaves nothing for Mrs. Levine. She needs a boarder to stand in for Mr. Levine.